Hey, this is Tucker Bethard, and you're listening to Walking the Floor.
I'm walking the floor over you.
Walking the floor.
I'm walking the floor. Walking the floor over you.
Hola, senores and senoritas. It's Monday. What does Monday mean? Monday always means it's time for a new episode of Walking the Floor. I am Chris Shiflett. I am always Chris Shiflett. I am still your host, Chris Shiflett. And I'm a little jet lagged today because I'm sitting in a hotel room in London looking out the window and it's raining and it's gray and it's very British out there. And when you by the time you're listening to this episode, you're going to know why I'm sitting in a hotel room in London taping this episode, because we're over here doing some sneaky Foo Fighter business that the whole world will know about. I don't know why I'm still talking about it like it's a secret, because by the time I post this, it ain't going to be a secret anymore. We will have announced Glastonbury and, you know, played our secret sneaky gig and done all our secret sneaky stuff that we're about to do in the next couple of days here. And I'll be back home in Los Angeles, snug as a bug in a rug. All right, what is going on? What is going on? You know, I posted a pre-order the other day, a little link to a pre-order to get my record West Coast Town on iTunes and various other sources. But what I forgot to mention in my tweet is that if you pre-order my record on iTunes, you get a bonus track that isn't on the regular record. It's called Mrs. America. I actually wrote that song last summer, and I kind of had it in mind that I was writing it about like a future Clinton presidency, but I think lyrically it still kind of works. So check that out. Yeah, Mrs. America, bonus track on the pre-order of iTunes version of West Coast Town. So get over there and order that shit up. And while you're doing that, pick up some tickets for my upcoming tour dates, man. There's lots of tickets left in places like Bozeman, Montana. Come on, Bozeman. Let's get some tickets. I made like Facebook events for that on my Facebook page. There's ticket links for all the shows there, so you can get them. By the way, I don't know if you've been over to my website lately, chrisshiflettmusic.com, but I know that it is woefully out of date, and I've got a guy that's working on that, and it's going to be fixed up and relaunched with current stuff on it real soon, probably in the next week or so. Maybe even by the time you hear this, it'll be up and running. I doubt it, but soon. It's coming. Okay. Let's take a little left turn here and head over to Chicago, to a place I like to call Zounds.com. You need music gear, right? Of course you need music gear. You need all sorts of music gear, and you don't want to leave your house. Your house is comfortable. What, you want to go out on the street and walk to the music store or take a city bus or something? No. You want to go on to Zounds.com and get whatever it is you need gear-wise at the best possible price. Zounds.com. If you can't beat them, join them. Come on, join those Zounds.com people and get your stuff. It's going to be cheap. All right, let's head on over to today's interview. All right, so I recently had the pleasure of sitting down with a young artist by the name of Tucker Bethard. Over at the Walking the Floor World Headquarters studio. And we had a nice little chat about what it's like to be an up-and-comer in the world of mainstream country music. He's a Nashville native himself, whose dad is, in fact, a songwriter, successful songwriter. And his brothers and uncles and grandpa and everybody around him are, like, superstar football players and stuff. And he actually had a college scholarship to go play baseball somewhere that he turned down to pursue his dream as a singer-songwriter out there in Nashville. And in fact, when I was doing a little research on Tucker, I watched his video for his single Mama and Jesus, and I couldn't help but notice that he was playing a very familiar-looking guitar. And that's right where we pick it up here with Tucker Bethard on Walking the Floor.
You know, I watched your Mama and Jesus video yesterday.
Oh, did you?
I got really excited at first because I was like, he's playing my guitar. But you're almost my guitar. I have a signature model through Fender.
Oh, did you?
And it's almost that guitar you're playing. It's like so close. I think it's just maybe the headstock's different.
Yeah, they've been really cool and hooked me up with some stuff.
But, oh, really?
I don't know, man. I gotta
tool them up, man. I'm gonna talk to them actually this week. I'm gonna be like, you gotta send that dude one of my signature models. What are you sending him the almost signature for?
No kidding. I don't know, man. I always use Gibson though, because like I don't know.
Can't say that out loud.
Right.
It's funny. I grew up a Gibson guy myself.
Yeah.
You know, that was my first. Like real guitar was the Les Paul.
Me too.
And even before that, you know, my older brother had an old SG.
Really?
So that was just sort
they're
of
tough
like,
to beat.
They're
know?
Tough to beat.
They
yeah,
are.
They are. I started exploring the Fender side of things in adult life.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I love Fender too. It's tough. I mean, I don't know. I guess amps and pedals have a lot to do with it too,
sure.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
You like those AC30s in there?
Love them.
Yeah. I've been wanting to mess around with one of those.
Those are great, man.
I know.
Especially that one's got a reverb.
Oh, does it really?
Tank or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's good for, you know, for twangy,
right?
You know, country type stuff.
That's cool.
It's cool because normally those things don't have that.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, but they're good for anything. It's like if you dial them up, they're
no kidding,
loud and crunchy. If you for the rock stuff, I forgot to turn my phone off because this is actually the first interview I've ever done. Apparently, sorry, not pro. It's tough getting over here this morning.
Yeah.
It's tough. It's like I have to do all these interviews early right now because I've been working.
Right.
So I appreciate you coming over.
Oh,
here.
No, man. So thanks for having me.
It's not a very rock and roll time of the day.
Yeah, no kidding. No, but I'm not a big morning person, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But it's nice. I appreciate you having me.
Well, what are you out here doing? Are you in the middle of touring or are you just doing promo? Like what's going on?
A little bit of both. Playing touring and whatnot, but then I flew out here to do the Jimmy Kimmel show tonight.
Oh.
So
oh, cool.
I'm doing that tonight. So then we're doing promo stuff as well.
Nice. I read that you've done like 200 gigs or something in the last year.
Yeah, last year.
It seems like an insane amount. Like, I'm wondering if you could talk about sort of what it's like as a young artist just sort of starting out in this business. Like,
yeah.
What you have to do to, you know.
Yeah.
For lack of a better word, like to make it, you know.
I mean, honestly, what I've kind of realized... So out of high school, I decided to, you know, try to dive straight into music and like, well, I mean, you know, not go to college and do it full time. And then, it was shortly after that I got a record deal. And so I was like 19 with a, you know, signed artist to a big label. And I thought, you know, like, well, there you go. I made it, you know, and whatnot. And then
where's my Ferrari, man?
Right. Then you realize that they don't really care about you until you, you know, prove that you matter. So, you know, me and I found some dudes and we got a band together and just started took a van and started traveling the country and playing anywhere and everywhere we could. And
this is before you had your EP out.
Oh yeah, this like 2 years ago. This is before. I mean, because the label wouldn't talk to me really, you know. Like, but they wouldn't talk to me, but they still held back all the music I had. So it was kind of a lose-lose. So I was like, well, if they're not going to promote it, then I'm just going to go out and promote it myself.
Wait, so hold on, explain that. So you had already recorded a bunch of stuff?
Like a bunch of demos and stuff like that. And
What is that? Like, how does that work? Do you just keep kind of like writing songs and recording songs until they go, yeah, I think you got an album here somewhere?
I don't know, man. I've always had a whole bunch of songs and still have a whole bunch.
And for people that don't know that are listening, your dad's a successful songwriter.
Yeah,
right?
So I've always been a songwriter. So I just kind of collected and added up a whole bunch of songs and I guess when the label finally decides to go in and record, you know, they want you to record stuff. That's when they finally listen to some and pick out a few and whatnot. So I don't know, man. We just kind of took a van out and did the whole, you know, slumming in a van for, you know, a year and driving it everywhere and trying to promote as much as we could. And then,
like, what do you promote when you're out there and you don't have an album?
Are you like, it's hey, tough. Just
remember me and us, you know, if something ever comes out,
that's honestly what it was. And I don't do any cover songs. Cause like, I don't know. I started off as a drummer and taught myself how to play guitar. So I don't really know any theory. So like most of
you don't need to.
I think it's overrated. Yeah. So it's like I got a tough time. I got to learn my own songs and promote my own songs. But it was tough because it's like if somebody did like you at a show, they'd be like, "Well, hey, I looked you up and couldn't find anything on you." And it's like, well, shoot, man, I hope they just remembered or videoed it or something, right, you know. Right. But eventually, you know, I got a great team around me, and we ended up making some noise and whatnot, and then I guess proved to the label that we were worth something, and then they stepped in and now it's all good.
I mean, I'm assuming, and I don't know anything, you know, obviously about your personal life or growing up, but I'm assuming you grew up or somewhat around the business or the sort of community of songwriters. Did you grow up in Nashville?
Yeah, I was born and raised.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, was your childhood like around sort of the, you know, country music industry? Via your dad, you know, given what he does?
I guess to some extent, yeah, definitely.
Right.
Yeah, kind of always around that environment, I guess. But I realized that, you know, you never really know what the music business is like until you're actually in it. Right. You know?
Well, how did that prepare you? Like, what were sort of, did you still have, I mean, everybody until they're actually in it's going to have some illusions about how it all works.
Right.
No, I did.
You know? Right, yeah.
For a long time, you know?
Yeah.
So how was that for you? You know, what was that like when you, you know, you mentioned that you decided to skip college and just go right into it. I mean, what were some advantages you had because of what you were raised around? What were some of the things that were like, kind of like shocking to you? Like, oh, wait.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh? There was a lot, man. I guess even despite the fact that I had a little bit of an advantage seeing somewhat of the business through my dad, like I still came in really naive about the whole thing, you know. I thought, I don't know, I thought it was gonna be a lot easier and stuff like that, you know. And or I don't really know what I thought. I guess the best way is just to be a little naive and
yeah,
and you know, I guess you realize that, you know, despite all the great business people that do what they do in that side, that, you know, you do have to stay on your ground as an artist because they don't always know what's best for you as an artist. And they don't, you know, nobody really knows your art and that side of it better than yourself. You know, they know the business side of it and what to do, you know, maybe to some extent, but, you know, that's all they know. So it's tough to blame them for what they want you to do or try to make you do and whatnot. But, so then when you stand your ground as an artist, I guess sometimes it comes across as being, you know, just like a little punk, but
uh-oh,
it's like,
oh, he's problematic.
Exactly what it is. And they don't like that. But, you know, at the same time, you know, you got to do what you got to do. In my opinion.
Did your dad, growing up, I don't know when you started writing songs on your own, but like, did your dad help you with that, give you feedback or tips or anything? I'm just sort of wondering, like, when you finally went out there into the world of songwriters in Nashville, which is like, it's a songwriter's town.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people doing that. Were you like, what am I trying to say? Like, had your dad sort of, you know, helped you with the process?
I think being, you know, he kind of just led by example, you know. He never really implemented nothing on me. I mean, because for the longest time, I was just like a drummer and just wanted to drum and stuff like that. And then, but I grew up around watching him do songwriter rounds and him bringing home demos and you know, so like I had a good grasp of it. And then when I started picking up the guitar and writing songs, I guess naturally, you know, that was kind of what I was, you know, followed is my dad. And, I never really listened to much country growing up, but when it came to songwriting, like my dad's, I've always loved it. So I guess it was kind of a mixture of like the music I listened to and
stuff. What was the music you listened to?
A lot of rock stuff, right. Like 70s. And then,
I mean, I was actually going to get to that eventually. It was the, like, listening to your EP, with a couple of tweaks here and there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why couldn't that be a rock record? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
no
stylistically,
kidding.
Like, and it sort of supports my theory that all musical genres are all sort of slowly becoming the same genre.
Right, no kidding, yeah.
But it's not that far off, you know? Like, what we do in the Foo Fighters and what you do is, those aren't miles apart.
No, I think one of the biggest things is, like, the song structure, like, the, you know, typical, like, verse, chorus, bridge, maybe, you know,
or whatever.
It is. Is definitely like country formatted, I guess. And
lyrically too.
Yeah, lyrically.
To me, the
right.
big difference between country and modern rock is the
a little less abstract.
Structure of it all.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, like it's more of a story and
right.
Yeah, definitely less abstract.
Mm-hmm. So I mean, I don't know. Then I just started writing songs and.
Did you find yourself writing with other guys that were in the same position as you, like young guys, just kind of finding their footing in the business, or did you? Or do you go right with, you know, some established older cats?
A little bit of both. Honestly, and there's so many great writers in Nashville, but I got a group of like, you know, there's like a core five, you know, writers in Nashville that, you know, I really stick with. But some of my favorite people to write with are just like my friends, you know, or, mm-hmm. or just like, you know, by myself or whatever it is, just because, I don't know, you don't have any... You know, you kind of get to, I don't know. It's just fun to vibe with, you know, your friends and just like you could write whatever you want to write. You know?
When you go into the, like a songwriting session with somebody, do you bring a piece of a song with you or do you just go in there blank?
That was one thing I got to give credit to my dad for. When I was starting to write more, and if I got to write with like one of the more established writers or whatever, He told me, you know, he's like, man, you better come in there and bring something, you know. So that's just kind of always how, I don't know, I work. Like I come in with a guitar riff or an idea or something, you know, and try to still do that every time. But sometimes it's just totally blank and then you just create something on the spot, which is right. pretty cool too sometimes.
Let's back up a little bit. What was it like growing up in your house? I know you come from like a super sports family. Like mm-hmm. your brothers are football players. Aren't there a lot of people with your grandpa, your dad,
yeah.
your uncle, like a bunch of, and you, I know you had a baseball scholarship that you didn't wind up taking, but like, was it, I grew up in a family that knew nothing of sports. So I'm actually kind of fascinated by this. Like, was it like a competitive household growing up with whatever you and your brothers were doing?
Yeah, it was really never a break in the house. Like there was always something and music too, just as much as sports. Like we would, me and my brothers had a band. So we would keep our parents up late in my room, just jamming and stuff like that. So,
did you have a band like that played out, like band?
I mean, we
high
played,
school band.
Yeah, we played some places, you know, like anywhere we really could. But then,
dude, that is like a modern marketer's dream, right there. A band of brothers that are all like superstar athletes and from this superstar family. That's crazy,
man. I thought we were gonna be something too, but they wanted to do more sports. I guess I was kind of like more passionate about it, but. Yeah, it was never a dull moment, whether we were playing, you know, football in the front yard or playing music in the house. We did a lot of stuff. I mean, we had, like, airsoft wars in our house and stuff like that. Like, there was, I don't know how my mom did it.
I have three kids, three boys myself, and it's crazy all the time.
I bet.
I get it. Like, what were you guys listening to? What was the music? You said you didn't listen to a lot of country, but what were your kind of primary influences growing up?
When I was like 8 or something like that, I fell in love with classic rock, like 70s rock. Like one of my first albums was the Moving Pictures album by Rush or whatever,
because yeah, nice.
Like I thought Neil Peart was like such a badass and whatnot.
And you were a drummer first,
right? So right? I guess that's what kind of, I think my dad said something like, you need to hear Neil Peart and like Tom Sawyer and all that stuff, you know. So I got that album and then learned like every 70s rock thing that came on this classic rock station and loved all that. And then I got into
that would be so dope if you, in the middle of your set, and for all I've never seen you live, maybe you do this, if you guys just total left turn, you go behind the drums and you blast out YYZ.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Yeah, I don't think I got enough drums for all that. Yeah, I think he's playing like a four piece kit, my drummer, so I don't know if I could do the I don't know. That's a tall
order for any drummer.
It is. But I don't know. I fell in love with Blink-182 too. Mm. They kind of got me into a lot of stuff, and
sure.
So I think that'll always be one of my favorite bands. And then a lot of alternative rock, you know, not to try to like, you know, whatever. I've always loved Foo Fighters and
oh, right on.
And Kings Leon and, you know, just kind of anything. And then,
didn't the producer for Kings of Leon wind up producing your EP? Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. We're working together. Angelo. Cool. He's a cool dude. He's fun to work with.
I mean, is there much sort of overlap in just in socially or even professionally out in Nashville between, say, somebody like you and some of the rock and roll people that live out there? Of course, there's a huge like rock and roll scene with Jack White and
right,
you know, Black Keys and all, you know, a lot of those cats around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I just always kind of like, you know, just kind of just writing whatever, you know, like I sometimes hate how people, you know, put music in a box, you know,
sure.
or, you know, label it too much to where it's like.
Well, I think most people that play music and are that passionate about playing music have really diverse tastes in music.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
So, but when you're like, you know, I know when I was a kid, I just thought like Motley Crue only hung out with, you know, Kiss and Ozzy. It would never have been caught dead with Duran Duran or what, you know what I mean?
Right.
And, you know, you grow up and you're like, nah, that's probably not how it was.
Yeah. I don't know. I've never really seen many of the rock side people out there. Well, then again, I kind of hide away when I'm back in town. You know?
Right.
I don't know. I kind of live outside of Nashville a little bit and don't really go downtown that much when I'm home, but I don't know, it is a cool environment there, you know, a lot of cool people and stuff like that, and it is cool that there is a rock side out there too.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, so drums were first for you. When did you switch over to guitar and singing?
Probably about 14 or 15. I don't know, I guess I was kind of getting into some things and had a lot of like, I don't know.
I did read a reference to your what was the the actual phrase here? Oh, where did it go? Where did it go? I put this in here on purpose. Something, and I can't find it on here now. But oh yeah, here you go. Your bio mentioned your wayward ways as a child. So do tell. Tell me about your wayward ways.
I don't know, man. I just kind of what any other kid.
She wrote it.
Kid.
Don't ask me.
I don't know. Nothing too special. I mean, I just always like to have fun. You know, kind of nothing too far off from like the normal teenage kid
right.
and stuff
so
like that.
You weren't like ripping off cars and shooting cops or anything.
Nothing like that.
Okay. I thought I could get a scoop here, but
yeah,
I'll let you off the hook.
No, I mean, I got in trouble here and there, but you know, nothing too crazy. I had a lot of internal stuff that I was trying to figure out. You know. And eating me up inside and stuff. So I kind of just figured out that songwriting was kind of like a great identity and outlet for me. So then
it's therapy in a way.
It's
sometimes.
The best therapy I've ever felt. So I fell in love with it solely on that fact, you know, and I was grounded quite a bit. So I had a lot of time to kind of just like sit up there and do nothing else. So that was good. I don't know.
So how did you're a teenager, you're playing with your brothers. How did that lead eventually to getting a proper record deal as a solo artist?
I started writing songs and collected enough songs to, when I was in high school, I guess, whenever I had time, go to like, you know, the Puckett's grocery or whatever, or go to wherever and perform them and play them for people. And that felt great too. I felt like, you know, that was my way of like, identity, I guess, on
that's
stage.
Like without
singing.
A band, you're just
yeah,
you're
just like kind of like riders around.
And all that
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah. Start doing that, and then recorded some stuff in high school. My dad was cool, and on Sunday, he just brought me and an engineer in there, and he said, "Yeah, you play everything." And so I just built tracks and just played everything and recorded a few songs, and then I guess some people in Nashville heard about them. And heard them, and by the time I dove all into music, I took some meetings with people who were interested, and I guess, you know, when one person offers you a record deal, everybody wants to see, you know, what's going on. So then a few came in, and I don't know.
You mentioned when we first started, like, kind of being ignored by your label and having and them sort of holding on to your songs in years of just like van touring and all that sort of stuff. But how is it for you now in that regard? I mean, now you've got an EP out. Things are obviously going well. You've done your own headlining tour. You know, it looks mm-hmm. like you're doing a ton of dates.
Yeah.
So are they taking notice now? Like, is your relationship with them good? Like, are you going to, I guess what I'm going to is like, is there a full length on the horizon?
I mean, yeah, I mean, it's, I hope so. I mean, basically, if I had it my way, you know, I would come out with three albums tomorrow. But, right. you know, and it is kind of, I got really nothing to complain about because, you know, I got such a great team in every aspect from management to you know, booking agent and band and everything. The only thing I guess I could, you know, would kind of bitch about is just I just want to get out more music, you know, and more that people, you know, can, I don't know. I think it was tough being represented by one song for a little while. And then, you know, it felt great getting, you know, five more out from like, you know, the EP. It's like, okay, well that feels great, you know, but still six songs in total to really represent me. I just don't, you know, I'd like to just have more out, but you know, whatever.
And you, you actually play the drums as well on your EP, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is that seems like that's kind of unusual in sort of mainstream country music with all the
yeah.
super duper talent pool that's out there. How did you sort of carve out? That just seems like something that like a producer would be like, nope, we're not doing that. Like, how did you sort of carve out? You know, the sort of power to make that decision. You know,
I don't know. I mean, I guess. That's kind of what I did on the first early demos I did, but it was, I mean, they, you know, I think everybody was kind of like, oh, you know, kind of scared of the idea, but I'm just really,
you're like, I can play like motherfucking Neil Peart, bitch.
Yeah. I'm just really picky when it comes to drums. You know, I mean, when I write a guitar riff, I kind of, it almost feels like I'm playing drums on guitar.
Really?
Or in my
you
head.
You still think like a drummer?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Dave Grohl does that.
I think it's tough not to, you know, if you're a drummer. And, so, that being said, like, it's just like, you got to play, you know what you want and everything and the feel of everything. So you kind of just, it's like, why don't I just do it? You know?
Right.
And, so I guess, yeah, I got the chance to do it and nobody said nothing bad, you know, everybody's cool with it. So I'll dig it.
So what, that said, like, what is next for you this year? Just more road dogging?
Yeah. More touring and, yeah, hopefully coming out with a full-length album as soon as possible.
Is it recorded?
Yeah.
Or do you have like 600 songs recorded? Like, pick 10!
Yeah, no kidding. There's quite a few I got that, yeah, I'm ready to get out. But, you know, I don't know. We'll see. It's still trying to pick out, I guess, dwindle down like the best project.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Kind of like treat the thing as a book. And, you know, each chapter's got to make sense in that book.
Sure.
You know, so
it's got to be a piece.
Right. So figuring that out and hopefully, you know, ready to get that thing out for sure.
Yeah, cool. Hey, I don't know if anybody mentioned this, but, you know, a lot of people play on the show sort of at the end of it. Do you feel like, I know it's early, but do you feel like belting out a tune?
I mean, I will.
I got a guitar. I got one right there. It's more or less tuned. Let me just double check real quick and see if there were any like burning desire questions that I forgot to ask you. Well, I guess, you know, one last thing. We didn't really get into why you chose to jump into the music business instead of going to college on a baseball scholarship, which sounds like a pretty sweet deal. And
yeah.
That sort of leads to my next question, which is, if we ever put together a Foo Fighter softball team, will you come and be the ringer? We'll just be like, no, that dude plays saxophone with us. I swear, he's in the band.
I would love to do that. That'd be awesome.
You know, I'm going to flip this around. And you can sing into this one. And this one. You can
just get like that. You got a pick on you? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm Tucker Bethard, and this is my new single, Mama and Jesus.
Mama
Sometimes I drink a little too much. I've been known to smoke and cuss and fat just because. And I've run out of breath doing my best to keep up with these demons. And I've let down a mama and Jesus. I'm gonna run out of road before I run out of tread. I find a line to cross every chance I get. If the well runs out, if I ever settle down, God knows it ain't no secret. It's all by the grace of mama and Jesus. So I'm gonna shoot this last light out and get a little lost before I get found. And I'm gonna burn this last one down and then turn it around before mama and Jesus run out of reason. But the only ones forgiving me are mama and Jesus. So I'm gonna shoot this last light out and get a little lost before I get found. And I'm gonna burn this last one down and then turn it.
Tucker Bethard doing a Walking the Floor exclusive acoustic version of his hit single Mama and Jesus. Love it. Make sure you go to tuckerbethard.com, find out about all his tour dates through February and March, or you can always find him at Tucker Bethard on the Twitter and whatnot. Let's hope he's got a full-length record coming soon, and Christ's sake, Fender, send that guy one of my signature models, not that copy version. Jeez, come on. Anywho, that's it for this week, people. We'll be back next week. As always, every Monday, new episodes of Walking the Floor. And in the meantime, if you're desperate, go to the iTunes store and listen to some of our old episodes. They're all up there. And while you're doing that, pre-order my goddamn record. Get yourself a bonus track. Okay, people, we'll see you next week. Adios, amigos!